true.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the DGP Dave Glover Podcast. Apologize for the last week or so. Here's the deal. Rach and I both love doing this. We truly do. We've met a lot of you out there and heard from you who love the podcast. But it's way down low on the priority deal because it's a hobby at this point. You know, it's not monetized. No one's getting paid, which is fine. I'm totally fine with that. It's just that everything that we have to do in a day for the DGS, however one makes their living, including our station and our bosses, that always comes first. So we have snuck away in the middle of the day on Wednesday. God, it's gorgeous out there. And
you know what? Let's just go outside.
Yeah, you know what?
We don't need to do this.
It's been another episode of the DGP. Thank you.
Yeah, and also, guys, we moved buildings, so things are just totally different here. We have to fight for studio time, and there have been, I know last week we promised we were going to have a DGP out on Friday.
Rachel just beat the shit out of Fred Bottomer.
I was like, Fred, get the fuck out of
It was bad.
I'm sick of your attitude, first of all.
You schooled him.
Yeah,
he's a diva.
Totally. Not the nicest guy in the entire world at all.
No.
So we promised we would have one out on Friday, and there was just no way we could do it. There was no studio space available. So that's kind of the position we're in, just trying to make a bunch of excuses.
And
so
we
you
both
guys,
made
guys
this
don't
sound.
Get mad at us.
Hmm.
Well,
hmm.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
All right,
not
so,
a podcast.
So I had a topic today
okay.
that I wanted to talk about. I want to talk about privilege. I think it's something that on our station a lot we scoff at because it's like, oh, you can just blame everything on white privilege and it's this and this, which is true. But it's also true that it does exist. I think we've agreed before that obviously people are born into better situations than others. There's a comedian who I really like. Her name's Erin McGathy. And she posted on her Instagram story a couple days ago. She was sitting at a bar in Ireland and this guy was freaking out on his girlfriend because a man had approached her in the bar and was harassing her. And he was like, why didn't you tell him to go away? Why didn't you do this and this? You could have avoided this. So it was essentially she had been harassed and he was blaming her. And Erin put on her story just, you know, a little summary of what happened. And she's like, this is called the just world hypothesis. It is the assumption that life is fair. And if something bad happens to someone, they deserved it. They're getting what they deserve. It's a way for us to rationalize how unfair life is. It's a way to make ourselves feel better. And it really struck me at the time because it reminded me of the conversation I think we had last week about the 34-year-old black woman who fell asleep in the common room at Yale. And on the show, I was like, I get it. I get that it was probably racially driven, but why was she asleep at 2 a.m. in the common room? Well, the fact of the matter, that's not a crime, especially if you're a student there. As much as I wouldn't fall asleep in a common area because I wouldn't want that trouble, it is not illegal to do that. And I felt like I was using the just world hypothesis of, oh, well, she could have avoided that. Because it's technically true. You could avoid it if you just watch yourself all the time. But there's also a victim in that situation. I just kind of wanted to bring that up to you and say, is that a hypothesis that you even agree with?
I'm not sure I understand it.
Okay.
So try again. So it's basically saying...
So this is the definition from Wikipedia. The just world hypothesis or just world fallacy is the cognitive bias that a person's actions are inherently inclined to bring morally fair and fitting consequences to that person, to the end of all noble actions being eventually rewarded and all evil actions eventually punished. In other words, the just world hypothesis is the tendency to attribute consequences to or expect consequences as the result of a universal force that restores moral balance.
So
basically, if it happened to you,
that,
you asked for it.
Okay. The assumption that good things will happen to good people who do good things and vice versa.
Yeah, and if the cops come and question you, it's because you were doing something wrong in the first place.
Gotcha.
To have to speak to them.
Okay, now I understand a little bit. I think I'm definitely a victim of that. I think I definitely have that bias. I no question about it, believe. And of course, it's a matter of degree. If I'm driving down Highway 40 and I see someone pulled over by the police, you know what? I start to say, if someone's in jail for murder, I really assume they did it. And if someone is in jail for drugs, they probably did it. But if they're pulled over by the cops for speeding, maybe they didn't. But that's not true. I really do assume, now that I'm thinking about it, that if you are charged with a crime, you did it. Maybe, you know what, though? In my defense, I spent 3 years in law school and 10 years practicing law, and that's usually true. Because I represented a ton of people. I didn't do criminal law, but most of the people I represented who were sued for something deserved it. And I remember a couple of times, because I give myself a lot of shit. It's become a bit almost, but and it's almost like I'm making this shameful confession that I was a good lawyer. I did very well in law school. And I had a few years working at big firms where I had really...
You said you were about to say, I had a few years working at Big Lots.
No, I had a couple of cases that I won that I shouldn't have because I was better than the other lawyer. But my people were good for it. They did commit negligence and hurt someone else. And so maybe that sort of informs my bias of thinking, if you're accused of something, you probably did it.
Okay.
So, yeah. And there's something in the law called a rebuttable presumption, which basically means, well, you can convince me otherwise, but I'm going to assume that blah, you're cheating on me, or you're blah, or you committed that crime, or you're not doing a good job, you're going to be late to work. And I kind of live my life as a rebuttable presumption in a lot of ways, that here's my paradigm, here's my vision. Now, on the flip side, I don't assume if you're a good person that does the right things, the good things are going to happen. That's the Mark Close vision of the world. Mark has always, and we've always fought about this, that if you try hard enough, you're going to succeed. If you want to be a doctor, you will be a doctor. You know, and I don't, too many times that's been disproven to me.
Now, you're talking about that in the context of a crime, which mm-hmm. I understand more. But what about in the context that the comedian Aaron McGathy brought up? There's a girl at a bar and she's harassed, and then her boyfriend wants to say to her, well, you could have done this and this to get out of
Can I be completely honest?
Yeah. That's why we're here.
If it were my girlfriend, I would probably feel that way emotionally because I would be threatened and I'd be scared. Mm-hmm. If it's my friend's girlfriend, I would probably be very defensive of her. Like, dude, come on. What the hell do you want her to do? Yeah. Punch him, call the cops. But if it's my girlfriend, the first 5 minutes, I have to admit, some part of me would be like, I wouldn't be accusing her of, oh, you wanted it. But I might accuse her of, you could have done these three things to stop it, just because I'd be so emotionally upset by it. Yeah. But if my emotion's taken out of it, like it's a stranger, I wouldn't think that.
Yeah, that's a really insightful way to put it, because I think we talked about this on the show yesterday on Tuesday. Check out the podcast. I said that I feel like, but since we always talk about in schools, they should teach you how to balance a checkbook and how to look for a job. You should be taught how to manage your emotions, and you should be able to identify when it's like my emotions are taking over in this situation. You're absolutely right. I think the entire just world hypothesis is an emotional response to try to self-soothe mm-hmm. and be like, well, there's got to be a reason that happened. I think it is emotional. Now, I think a lot of people, especially a lot of people my age, the millennial generation, have been raised their entire lives being told your feelings are valid, your feelings matter, which is absolutely true, but your feelings are not fact. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people believe that since they feel something, mm-hmm. it is true.
Yeah, I agree. So if there's the just world hypothesis, shouldn't there be an unjust world hypothesis, which would be the corollary that, just take, for example, race again, that if something bad happens to a black person, a black person may be more apt to assume that it was sinister?
Yeah.
As opposed to, well, maybe they shouldn't have been sleeping in that room because there's a sign that says, don't sleep, or whatever it happens to be.
Wouldn't the unjust world hypothesis just be reality? That it really is the luck of the draw. It's however, whatever hand you were dealt is how you're going to go through life. Now, you can obviously help yourself. Yeah. God helps those who help themselves. I say that all the time. But the reality of the situation is things happen randomly. The universe happens randomly. I don't think there's any like...
Yeah, that's a very... Yeah. That's one reason I'm an agnostic is because it's so much easier and more honest. And I don't mean easier as in lazy easy. I mean, it just makes so much more intuitive sense. It just rings true to me and being in tune that this is random. And there are 7 billion people on this earth that are acting and we bump into each other and things happen. That's so much easier for me to accept than there is a God up there that has the craziest plan of all time. That is somehow that everything that happens to you is for your own good. And in the end, you're going to look back and go like, oh, thank God my kid lost both of his legs to leukemia. That doesn't ring true to me. I have to really twist myself around. And I have. I was very religious for a very long time. So, I do think it makes much more sense, just kind of randomness and natural consequences of your action. That if I want to go rob a bank today, I'll probably get away. Given the fact that they're just taught to give the money and I'm smart enough, I could probably get away. I bet I could get away 10 times. I'm going to get caught. Eventually, natural consequences are, if you keep doing it, eventually something's going to go wrong and you're going to get caught. And so yeah, I think all those things are true. I think the just world hypothesis, I think the unjust world hypothesis, which I guess is just reality. And then I think I had a conversation yesterday with a couple of the sheriffs at the FBI law enforcement deal that I was on the panel, and they're fans of the show and complimenting the show. And I just said, to me, the ultimate analogy is you're just calling balls and strikes. And when I watch Sean Hannity, which I hate to do, but when I do, every pitch Trump throws is a strike. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it went over the catcher's head or in the dirt. It's a strike. And when I watch MSNBC, every pitch he throws is a ball. It doesn't matter whether it was right down the middle of the plate. And I hate that. And the same goes for people who are Cardinals fans, who are Muslims, Christians, atheists. I don't have respect for atheists who cannot acknowledge a valid argument in favor of there being a God. You're just a pussy. Mm. Just be intellectually honest, be intellectually brave, and be able to say, I hate to admit it, but that one caught the corner. That's a strike. That's a good argument. So.
Yeah, I definitely believe that life isn't fair, obviously. Everyone doesn't start out at the same, starting line at all. Everyone has a different path they have to take. But I also don't believe it's inherently unfair. I think if something bad happens to you, you have a choice. You can either revel in that bad situation, or you can say, okay, how do I make it better? Yeah. And those are the people that I really respect in life. And that's who I strive to be. Maybe I'll give myself a day to really be emo about it and mm-hmm. really wallow, but I want to move forward. I want to keep doing the best with what I have.
I'm the same way. My initial response to things is almost always defensive. I put up my dukes and I'm ready to fight. But that's the tip of the iceberg. The iceberg for me is somewhere between taking responsibility, owning the situation, and self-punishment,
mm-hmm.
and
I'm like that too.
Yeah,
every situation I'm like, what could I have done differently? I'm in the middle of a situation. I'll talk about it once it's resolved, but I'm in the middle of a situation right now that's not great, but I do for once in my life feel like I'm pretty much completely in the right.
And I
feel like I'm making major personal progress, that I'm not spending a bunch of time stewing about what I could have done differently
in
a situation.
I know you don't want to share the situation you're going through, but I know it very well. And I think it's a great example of going back to the good things don't always happen to good people. The person that you're having the issue with is a complete bitch and completely screwing you over, and he's going to get his way. And that happens.
Yeah. And there's nothing
happens.
I can do about it.
There's a great scene in Liar Liar with Jim Carrey when he's unable to tell a lie and his car gets towed and the guy's like, it's $500 to get it out. And he goes, I'm going to bitch and I'm going to moan and I'm not going to be able to do anything about it. And it's so true. Hmm. It's like there are times when people take advantage of you and they just get away with it. And there's nothing. And it's so frustrating. But short of like, and it's really something I hope I can teach my kids, although I'm not great at it, is knowing when to cut your losses. Whether it's in an argument with someone you truly care about or something like what you're going through. The person you're having this thing with is a dick. He's never, under any circumstances, going to go, you know what, Rachel? I thought about it. I see your point.
Right.
It's never going to happen. So eventually you have to decide, I'm going to stop punching this brick wall. Even though I'm in the right, it's just bloodying my hands.
Yeah.
That's tough. But that's true maturity.
Yeah, I'm truly mature.
Think about being a politician where this happens 80 times a day. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. Man, Dave, I think about that all the time, especially when Hillary and Trump were like really campaigning and you watch them just go from place to place and you're talking to everybody. And I'm like, how do you sleep at night? How do you relax? Like, it just feels like you're in fight or flight mode all the time.
You have to be a special person. I truly believe it. I think it has to be like a surgeon. And I know part of this is trained into the surgeon, but I think part of it's also just born that these people like Corey Solman and Doc Hagen are able to walk into a brightly lit room, take a knife, slice somebody open. That's nuts.
It's insane.
But it's that careful, dispassionate ability. And I didn't have it as a lawyer, especially a divorce lawyer. A good divorce lawyer like Susan L. Ward, who I represent, is like this because I've seen her in action. She cares, but she's not going to take it home.
She can detach.
She can detach.
Which is extremely healthy.
Yeah, and I couldn't.
I think sometimes, I mean, I work in radio, so I make no money. I'm not Dave Glover. And sometimes I think, like, man, should I have done something else? Like, I love what I do. But Mark and I were even just talking yesterday. Like, radio doesn't always have the best future. You are not guaranteed at all to have any sort of pension, whatever. And I try to think about the other things I'm passionate about. And I love kids. And sometimes I think, like, was that my calling? Should I have worked with kids? Should I have tried to help kids? But I also feel like I would be way too emotional. And I just feel like I would get my heart broken every day, you know, especially if I had to see a child going through a hard time. I feel like the amount of help I would be able to give maybe wouldn't be proportionate to like the personal turmoil I would be going through, you know?
Yeah. It's tough. Isn't it? Now I'm getting really existential, but it just, let's say that we live 80 years. My mom's 90. Let's say we live 90. It just doesn't seem like long enough. You know, it's the only game I know that you can't understand anything about it until you're in the middle of it. Every other game, you can sit on the sidelines and go like, okay, what are those hoops for? Oh, the ball goes through the hoop. Okay, can I just carry it? I have to bounce it. Okay. And then you get out there and you know the basics and then you get better. But in life, you're just thrown out there and you're like, the fuck am I, what? And then by about the time you figure it out, it's like, well, you're old. go away. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I really do, to my detriment, feel like what I'm living right now is like a practice life. And when I get to 80 or 90, some wizard is going to go like, okay, not bad. Now let's do it for real. Ready, action. And I'd be like, oh, I got this.
I'm the Michael Jordan of this new life.
Oh, you kidding me? I'm going to kill this next one.
I feel stupid today. I feel like I can't talk.
Yeah, I get like that.
I've been stumbling hard.
I get like that.
You
know what
I
always think?
Can I
be a complete asshole? Yeah. Whenever I get like that, you know what I think? Oh, this is what it's like to be stupid. I do, because I'm not 6 feet tall. I'm not the most handsome guy in the world, but I'm empirically fairly smart just based on like the testing and law school and show and stuff.
Yeah, you bring it up a lot.
But there are times I feel completely stupid.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, let's go back to basketball. Even someone who's not great at it sometimes goes unconscious and they just can't miss. And then they know, oh, here's another analogy. I used to play Sunday football every Sunday, pick up football with a bunch of lawyers. And I was, you know, average to good in that little, you know, group of lawyers. But one year we had the worst ice storm ever. And I wore golf spikes. And everyone was slipping around. And I could run faster than on normal ground. And I could cut harder because I was wearing crampons, basically. And no, I mean, it wasn't fair. I had to take them off. And I remember thinking, oh, this is what it's like to be Michael Jordan or Einstein. This is what it's like. Like, everyone looks so stupid to me. They're so slow. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's like to be wearing golf shoes on the ice every day of your life. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be, it would be amazing and it would be frustrating. Because it'd be hard to find people you could really hang out with.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yeah. I had like, this isn't the same thing because I feel like when you bring up like athleticism like that, a lot of that, I don't know, maybe it is the same thing. I was in a meeting yesterday talking about like sponsorships and stuff and everyone's sitting around. It's like normal crew, couple of new people. And then our boss's boss, Becky, comes in and she's just like in charge. Like, I just, like, she just sat down and she just handled everything. She's like, well, what do you think about this? Like, just cutting to the chase in a way that I admire so much. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a moment like that. It was kind of like, watch, yeah, we're having a normal, boring business meeting. And then someone who's really fucking good at it just came in and cut it in half.
And, you know, it's, I know Becky really well. And it's two things. She is really good at that. And she doesn't have time not to be.
Yeah, that's true.
They always say, you want something done right, give it to someone busy. Because you don't have time to fuck around.
She came in like halfway through the meeting because she was so busy.
Yeah.
She had just left another one.
You just said, I talk too much about how smart I am. One of the cockiest things I've ever done in life, but certainly my radio career, it's probably 10 years ago. Show was number one and just, you know, I was just killing it. And they had this thing they started for all the clients where they would bring in clients one by one into a big conference room. They'd get about 10 people together all from, you know, all walks of life in radio. And we would brainstorm for like an hour and a half about this business and how to make it better. You know what I said? I really said this. And I stand by it. I said, I will do this anytime you want, but you bring me in at the end. After you do all your stupid shit, you bring me in the last 5 minutes, and I'll tell you what you really should do. That's super crazy cocky, but every fucking time I did it. Every time. I remember Fast Eddie's, PT's. I remember those two in particular where I came in, and there's a big classic whiteboard covered in ideas, and I just walked in, and I just went, I didn't say this because I'm not this big of a dick, although I thought it. But I'm like, this is all stupid. These are all stupid things you say. And I know in brainstorming, the first rule is you don't judge. But man, these are stupid ideas. So.
What was the response when you said that?
Well, I said it like to Jeff.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I didn't say it to a bunch of people. And but he was just like, well, okay then. But I feel like, okay, now I'm feeling all self-aware because you said that.
Oh, stop.
No.
It was a joke.
It's a joke based in reality. But I feel...
But you are smart, so it's fine. I wouldn't have said that if you were, like, really stupid.
But this is the balls and strikes thing. Is... It's not like it's not bragging if a bird flies. That's gay. But it's more like... If I'm playing basketball with some Mark Bulger, hell, I used to play wiffle ball with Mark and basketball with Mark, and he would crush me.
No.
He wasn't showing off.
Yeah.
He's just 100 times better at everything.
You know what? You're right. I've been in meetings like that with you, and I've, like, client meetings where you walk in and you're like, well, this is what I would do. And they're like, oh my God, Dave, I would have never thought about that. And I've had a few of those moments myself because I work for you and I'm mentored by you.
Well, and thank God, I found this because...
Oh, I know.
I'm straight up bad at most things. Well, I've been fired like 5 times in my life, maybe more, because I'm bad at stuff and I'm lazy.
Mm-hmm.
I'll find so many ways to get out of work. When I see people like that here, I know you. I know exactly what you're doing. I know exactly who you are. Been there, brother. It's not that I'm... like judgmental, like, oh, if that guy just spent as much time working. Like, when I was a lawyer, I was famous for having 2 files for each case. One that I would show the partners and one that was real. And the one that was real was a mess. It was I just covered my tracks constantly. And there's no doubt if I had just worked a regular, even an 8-hour day, I'd be fine. But I was so busy jackassing.
You really don't judge other people because there's been a couple of times where I was like, oh, man, I feel like yesterday I wasn't the best producer I could have been. I feel like I let you guys down. And you're like, what? I don't care.
It's true.
And I know you mean it.
Yeah. You know, someone has to really cross the line with me.
Oh, I know.
For me to be like, listen, this is unacceptable.
Right. All right. You want to wrap it up?
No.
All right.
It's good. I like it.
What do you want to talk about? What'd you get on your ACT? Did you take an ACT?
Yeah. I just listened to a podcast about intelligence and about IQ scores.
I didn't score super high on mine.
I did fine, but the point that this expert in IQ made was, it's called G. General intelligence is called G. And G is universal. You're either smart or you're not. And like on the ACT, he made the point that very, very few people score very high on verbal and very low on math.
Right.
I did.
I did too.
I had like a 9, you know, it's like, I think it scores up to 37. I had like a 36 in English and the non-mathematical things. And I literally had like a 7.
Oh,
on
wow.
Math.
Yeah.
Oh. Horrible.
See, yeah, I got like 33s and stuff on the reading comprehension and the English, but then like math and science, I went to a Christian school, so I got like 20s in those.
Oh, and here's the thing. I didn't give a shit. Like, I got good enough to get into SIU.
Right. Who cares?
Who cares?
I'm the loser who just brought it
up. I think it took like a 21 to get into SIU, and I had like a 28 or something, and I'm like, well, that's 7 more than I need.
Yeah, that's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I did really well
on
the LSAT.
That's above average, for sure.
I did so well on the LSAT because it was just an IQ test.
Yeah.
You didn't have to know anything.
Yeah, my friend Luke is a lawyer, and I remember when he was studying for the LSAT, like, I helped him a couple of times, and it was fun. I love questions like that.
I did, too.
Yeah.
I did, too. And interestingly to me, if you give me a math, and I do this with Phoebe sometimes, because she still tries to get me to help her with math, but if you give me numbers, I'm lost. But if you make it a word problem, even though it's math, it helps me to conceptualize, oh, the train's going to Cleveland. If you just give me, like, how many blah, it's really tough for me.
Are you seeing this microphone right
now? I am.
Get out of my face.
Weird. So, yeah. So I thought that was interesting that he said there are so few people.
It would never happen.
Yeah,
except
it
to the two people in this
it
studio.
It just wouldn't happen. Like, oh, okay, well.
Oh, you weren't in this. It was the same meeting that I was talking about with Becky yesterday. And we were all trying to divide. Like, this is why I'm stupid about math. Whenever I'm in a math class and I've been in it for a couple weeks, I'm like a whiz. I'm getting 100% on everything because I'm paying attention. I'm engaged, whatever. If you were like, Rachel, divide 500 by 8, I would just be like, no. Like, I just don't want to do it. I'm just lazy. Even simple stuff, I'll just pop open the calculator on my phone.
I can top that. You and I eat lunch together almost every day. And I typically, like, if we go to Chris's, where we go a lot, and the bill's like 23. So I know that like a 20% tip's like 5, but I'm here every day. I want them to like me, so
right.
I'll tip 10 and or like 8. And so if it's 23 plus 8, I will sit there for a while. I've even asked you.
Yeah.
Be like, what's 8 and 5? And I know it, but I don't know it. You know what I mean? Like I used to. Like.
And you could very easily know it.
Yes.
But it's like, I don't want to expand mental energy.
Yeah.
That's how I feel a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Which is just, that's a tragedy because we are both intelligent people and that is incredibly lazy.
You know what it's like?
However, technology has made it so easy to be lazy.
It's the equivalent of letting your grass in your lawn grow to 2 feet because you just don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And that's how I am with things like that. I don't give a shit that I'm so terrible in math, and I don't want to get any better. I don't need to get any better. I would rather spend time rewatching an episode of Anthony Bourdain or reading my book or doing nothing than I would to get better in math.
It's honestly the same thing with things like reading. It's like exercising a muscle. It really is. Another friend of mine was an English major and read all this classic literature. And I had said to her, like, yeah, when I was in like eighth grade, I was reading Crime and Punishment, like to read Crime and Punishment. It wasn't for school. But I feel like if I tried to sit down and do that now, I don't feel like struggling through the first three or four chapters. And she said it really is like a muscle that you exercise, and when you do it more, it's easier. And now that you haven't done it in 15 years, yeah, of course it's hard.
I love to read. It's one of my very favorite things. But I have a very narrow taste. And I remember back when Game of Thrones first came out, and Nick and I were watching it together, and it was like a Nick and I thing, mm-hmm. and I really loved it. So I could have gone out and bought the first book. No. I bought every book.
Of course.
It was some sort of like...
Why go back to the store?
Yeah. For only $130.
Exactly.
I mean, it was online, though, because I can only read on my iPad. So I bought them all, and I started reading, and I the first book of one of these, the first 80 pages is like, Thorgon gave birth, and you could have put a gun to my head. I couldn't finish it. I did like three pages, and I'm just like, I'm done. I will never know what the white wizards look like, because I'm done.
There are no white wizards.
Whoever they are.
In Game of Thrones. All right, I feel like my stomach is growling so loudly the mic is picking it up.
Oh, crap. I feel like we owe him a long one.
This is long. This is 30 minutes.
That's not long. Next week, we go an hour.